Welcome to the Minerals and Royalties Podcast, the home of CEOs and investors in the minerals and royalties space. This is the Kitchen Table War Story Series, ground zero for the legendary tales of the minerals space.
Hey guys, this is Tim Powell from the Minerals and Royalties Authority. I recently sat down with Jim Hatcher, owner of Consul Properties, who came onto the podcast to walk through some of his wild stories from being a landman over the last 40 years. Let's jump into the episode and hear more of what Jim had to say.
Hi, this is Jim Hatcher. I'm president of Consul Properties, and these are my kitchen table war stories. And I've been a landman mineral buyer since the early 1980s. And this story actually goes back to one of the first jobs that I had after I'd been a young landman for a couple of years. So this is more than 40 years ago. And working on a small crew in central Arkansas, Hope County, trying to buy big tracts of oil and gas leases cheap, and had never worked Arkansas before, but there was a small crew. And we located a lot of people to lease, but there was a group of people who lived in deep into the Ozarks, and people who didn't have telephones, didn't have bank accounts, and typically we were told came to town very infrequently. So we were going to have to go see them. And in Arkansas, in the hills, there are not nice straight roads. So hard to get directions on how to get somewhere. And there was a family we were going to go see, and really hard to follow directions. So we had to stop every mile or so to make sure we were on the right road, and going to see a man named Eugene Heflin, and saw a couple of things that day that I had never seen before. We drove by a guy who we asked directions from, and he was plowing his field with a mule. And he helped us out with directions. We kept driving and finally got to the turnoff to the house, but it was down a long dirt road. So we turned down the dirt road. We got about a half a mile, and there's a dog laying in the middle of the road and not inclined to move, even with a car bearing down on him. So we had to park the car, walked back even deeper into the woods, finally got to the family compound, which was three tar paper shacks, a lot of old farm buildings, barn, stable, but everything very old, vehicles that didn't look like they'd moved in a while. And, you know, you call this kitchen table war stories, and this actually ends up on a kitchen table, but it was very primitive. And we were concerned working in Arkansas about moonshiners, which I didn't think was a real thing until a local convenience store got busted for selling moonshine. And in those days, we also had to worry about illegal marijuana growing. So we were going to stay on the roads, the paths, and we got up to the family compound, and old Mr. Heflin, and I say old, he might have been, at the time it was hard to tell if he was 50 or 80, very thin, wearing old overalls, and he was cutting weeds beside one of the barns with a scythe. I knew what a scythe was, but I'd never actually seen anybody use one before. And old barns, and there was a hog pen that he had made out of wiring old rusty car doors together. And I knew it was a hog pen because there was a hog in it. And small shacks. So he came up to us and we started talking to him, and not a great conversationalist. We would say hello, talk to him, ask him questions. And he thought for a while before answering any questions, and he'd answer them very slowly, but a nice enough man. And the family, I guess, would kind of gather around to hear what we were talking about. And we talked to him for quite a while, and it was obvious that we were going to have to make a few more trips to get a lease from him. We're going to have to build some kind of a relationship with the man. So we went back a couple of more times. And on one of the visits, like I say, the family would stand around, and his young daughter was there, and she had a little pet mouse in her hand, and she was petting it, and it was crawling around her neck. And I looked over a minute later, and it's hanging by its tail from her finger. And I thought, what? I didn't think a mouse could do that. I looked closer. It was a baby possum that was her pet. So, you know, you make do when you're living like that. And they were such an interesting group of people that whenever we got somebody new on the crew, we would take them out there to let them know what they were going to be dealing with. And most of them were shocked, and not in a good way. The last time we went up there, talked to him about getting a lease. We walked up to the compound and there was nobody around and nobody came out to meet us. So we were trying to figure out where everybody was and we were, you know, hollering out their names. And we walked up to the most substantial of the tar paper shacks, which is the one that he lived in. And the front door was just, there was no air conditioning. So the front door was a screen door. And I could see him in the kitchen of his house with his back to us. So I was hollering, you know, "Mr. Heflin, we'd like to talk to you." He turned around and started walking to the door, and both of his arms are covered in blood up to the elbows, which is up in the woods of Arkansas, not something you want to see. He starts walking slowly towards us. And as he got about halfway towards us, I could see into the kitchen, and the hog that we saw on our first trip was on the kitchen table on its back, laid open. They were butchering the hog in their kitchen. So he walks up to the door, and by this point, he's a little tired of talking to us, trying to get the point across that he's not going to sign a lease. He told us, in fact, if there were beer wells out there and if he wanted another well, he would dig it himself. And I, at that point, I was satisfied to let him do it. So that was our last trip out there. But butchering the hog on the family kitchen table was something that would never dreamed I would see. And it was kind of an unpleasant sight.
Was there a moment that you saw blood and you there's no one in the house, there's no one on the property, and you're thinking he murdered somebody? Were you fearful at any point?
Well, it happened fairly quickly. I mean, he turned around, started walking towards us. And I mean, I wasn't there alone. I was there with two other guys on the crew. And it was the kind of shock that you stare at first. And then as he got about halfway to the door, I could see what was going on in the kitchen. Plus his wife started yelling at him to come back and help her with the hog. So initially I was extremely concerned, but that didn't last very long by the time he got up to the door. But it was still something that none of us expected to see. And we gave up on getting an oil and gas lease from Mr. Heflin. Yeah, it was like going back in time. I expect now if I went back there, their lives would be very similar 40 years later, because they didn't seem to have changed much in 100 years. I don't know why they would change in the last 40.
Welcome to An Ounce of Prevention. The team at Our Recent Associates has partnered with Tim Powell to bring you brief legal updates on issues that matter to mineral owners, non-ops, and operators. We hope you find this segment informative. As always, if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me, Rachel Reese, at podcasts@rreeselaw.com. Today's case is a recent ruling by the Federal Third Circuit Court of Appeals, but coming out of the state of Pennsylvania, called American Home Assurance Company versus Superior Well Services, Inc., that focuses on accidents, insurance, and breaches of warranty. In this case, Superior was a vendor contracted by U.S. Energy Development Corporation to frack some wells owned by U.S. Energy. American is Superior's insurer and provided Superior with commercial general liability insurance covering property damage arising out of an occurrence. In October 2007, Superior was informed by U.S. Energy that Superior had damaged several wells during fracking. U.S. Energy claimed, and the jury ultimately found, that Superior breached their warranty to perform services in a good and workmanlike manner, and the jury awarded U.S. Energy approximately $13 million. Prior to the judgment, however, Superior declared bankruptcy. Superior and U.S. Energy turned to the insurer, American, who refused to pay the judgment, arguing Superior's failure to frack the wells in a workmanlike manner brought Superior's actions outside the coverage of their insurance policy, which is what we're talking about today. The Third Circuit agreed with American, holding that the occurrence-based insurance policy American provided to Superior does not include coverage for work done in an unworkmanlike manner. American's insurance policy defined occurrence as an accident, but didn't define accident itself. Under Pennsylvania precedent, the plain meaning of accident requires an unexpected and undesirable event. And faulty workmanship cannot be an accident because it is too foreseeable to be considered an accident. So why should you care? Well, assume with me for a second that U.S. Energy had a knock-for-knock indemnity in its contract with Superior, whereby U.S. Energy was responsible for damage to its well, even if Superior was negligent. The only way for U.S. Energy to recover in this instance against Superior would be to base its claim on a breach of warranty. But what this case is saying is that there is no insurance under a standard occurrence-based CGL policy for claims of breach of warranty. So vendors and operators, if the vendor goes bankrupt like Superior did, might be left holding the bag. Thanks for listening, and I hope you found this informative. I'd like to thank Siam Rahman, a law clerk in our Houston office, for this content. As always, subscribe to our blog, An Ounce of Prevention, or follow us on LinkedIn for the latest updates.
The information and material in this advertisement is general information about our practice and firm and is for educational and informational purposes only. This information does not offer specific legal advice, and the use of this information does not create an attorney-client relationship with RRNA or any of its attorneys. The information in this advertisement should not be considered legal advice, and persons should not act upon this information without first engaging professional legal counsel.
I don't know if you can talk about their sort of landman do, but you know, when you're a landman, you get to see people's actual real legal names. And some of them, I'm just astonished at what people name their children. There was a guy in Eastern Oklahoma whose initials were LL. So his friends all called him Double L. And when his son was born, he named his son Double L. First name is Double. There was a family in Northwest Oklahoma that the girl's name, and I knew immediately how to pronounce it. Her name was spelled ROC'C, Roxy. And her sister's name was Pebbles.
Wow. Okay.
And we leased a guy named Marmaduke. Man, why would you give someone that name like that? Anyway, yeah, getting to see people's actual real legal names is kind of a hoot sometimes. So we're working in Arkansas and we've got a pretty good per diem, but one of the guys on the crew who is a very, very intelligent guy, but also very odd, spoke fluent German and Spanish. And some days he would just decide, I'm going to speak German all day, which is funny for about 2 minutes. And then it gets really annoying. And also, this is in the day when you didn't need any kind of a land, but PLM or energy management background to get a job. If you could read and write and drive a car, you could be a landman. So this guy, his main thing, we would have him buying leases, making phone calls, and he stuck to himself a lot. He was a nice enough guy. But when we would all go out to dinner, he would be in his room and he had a Coleman stove and he would steam vegetables and stuff like that for dinner to save the per diem. And so one night we decided, you know, this guy's name was David. We said, you know, Dave sits in his room eating his steamed veggies. You know, let's go have dinner with him. Let's order a couple of pizzas and eat dinner with David. And so we did. There were about five or six of us went to his room. He's eating his steamed veggies and we're eating pizzas. And he's got this seasoning that he was putting on his pizzas. And one of the guys on the crew said, you know, is that stuff any good? And Dave said, yeah, I really like it. So the guy takes it and he sprinkles it on his pizza. And as he's eating his pizza, he's reading the ingredients that are on the container. And about halfway through the ingredients, one of the ingredients in it was earth. And the guy goes, we're putting dirt on our food and eating it? And Dave's going, no, man, it's earth. And the guy's going, bullshit, we're putting dirt on our food. You bought dirt and we're putting dirt on our food and eating it. But this didn't surprise us too much about him. There were still a lot of, you know, hippies in those days. And Dave was the guy that said, you know, I don't smoke pot as much anymore, but I still take acid about once a month just to kind of blow the tubes out. And I'm just an interesting, odd guy. I followed up about 10 or 15 years later to see what this guy was doing. And he's a school teacher in Tulsa. So I doubt if the parents know or would understand some of his views when he was younger. But yeah, I mean, there's interesting guys. One of the best landmen I ever worked with, his previous employer was the Department of Corrections, and he was not a guard. He was an inmate. 18 months for selling Quaaludes, basically. I helped him fill out his first tax return when he was 25. And I said, have you never filled out a tax return before? He said, I'd never had legal income before. But turned out to be an extremely smart guy, very personable, which you have to be in this business as well. And just was great at managing people, talking to people, doing the title work, doing everything. He was just ended up being one of the best landmen I ever worked with. And his background would not have told me that the guy was going to be any good. You know, there were people who were becoming landmen just because there were very few jobs in the late 1970s, early 1980s that for someone with no experience, you could make $40,000, $50,000 a year in those days. When the bust happened in the mid 80s, that went to, you know, $75 a day, but then there were no better jobs around. But yeah, there were lots of very interesting people in that business.
Hey guys, I wanted to take a quick break from the conversation to say thank you to all of our podcast sponsors. Your property is your legacy, so you should only leave it in the hands of a land management company who has a legacy of its own. If you own oil and gas interests or act as a fiduciary for those who do, you can find a long-term partner at Farmers National Company, who since 1929 has taken great pride in helping clients maximize the benefits of property ownership by providing turnkey management services and by working alongside them through generational transfers of specialized assets such as oil and gas interests and farmland. To learn more, visit fncenergy.com or reach out directly at energy@farmersnational.com.
Since 2019, the Texas Mineral Company has been a leading ground game broker for minerals and non-op deals, closing over 120 transactions across the Permian, SCOOP/STACK, Haynesville, Bakken, Powder River Basin, DJ, and Eagleford. With deal sizes ranging from 50K upwards of 5 million and 1.5 NRAs upwards of 3,500 NRAs, the Texas Mineral Company can be flexible on where and how they can source your deal flow. For more information on how your team can work with the Texas Mineral Company, please email Toby Martinez at toby@thetexasmineralcompany.com.
Scaling up your portfolio while minimizing G&A is the name of the game in the minerals and non-op space. Whether you're a brand new fund, an established team who's growing quickly, or a fully developed portfolio in harvest mode, Opportune's back office outsourcing team can help. Stop worrying about all the headaches that come along with day-to-day accounting and back office operations and contact Opportune today. For more information, please visit www.opportune.com. Over the past 20 years, Riverbend Energy Group has been the definitive leader in the non-op and mineral space, where they are actively acquiring minerals in the Delaware Basin, Midland Basin, the Williston, and the Eagleford. Following their $1.8 billion sale of their non-op platform in 2022, they are also back actively acquiring non-op interests in the Delaware Basin, Midland Basin, and Williston. If you have minerals or non-op working interests in these areas that you would like to sell, then please visit www.riverbendenergygroup.com for more information.
Hi there, it's Rachel Reese at R. Reese & Associates, your outhouse counsel. You may ask, what's an outhouse counsel? Well, it's a law firm that is focused on the day-to-day legal tasks that normally would be completed by your legal department. Our attorneys in Houston and DFW have spent their careers in both in-house positions and at large law firms and can provide your company with the efficient and responsive service you would expect from your own legal department for things like contracts, transactions, and title opinions at a fraction of the cost of what you're used to paying. So whether your company has no legal department or your legal department is a mighty team of one, we can help. Give us a call at 832-831-2289 or learn more at rreeselaw.com.
There was a family that we went to see, and this is in the summer in Arkansas and extremely humid, north of 95 degrees, just brutally hot. And we're running from the air conditioner in the car to the air conditioner in the person's house. We go to this one house, knock on the door, the woman opens the door, and a wave of heat comes out of the house. It turns out she's making preserves. So she's cooking in the kitchen, and it is as hot as it was outside, it was hotter inside. So she said, let's go out beside the house and sit in the shade where it's a little cooler. So we go out there, and this woman and her mom, who was probably a grandmother, they come out of the house, and these women obviously do physical labor a lot because they are muscled up. And we all sit down on chairs that had seen their better days. And under the eave of the house was a wasp nest that had to have been 2 feet in diameter, massive wasp nest. And the women are sitting there passively on their chairs. And my buddy and I are sitting in our chairs, swatting away wasps. And the wasps are flying around these women and landing on them, and they're not flinching. And we're just, you know, battling the wasps. And after about 5 minutes, I think one of us said, "You don't really want to lease your stuff, do you?" And we got out of there. I mean, I never felt less manly. You know, these two ladies are, you know, the wasps don't bother them a bit, and I probably wouldn't have wanted to arm wrestle either one of them. The other thing about Russellville is it was a dry county, and that's why the moonshiners were active there. For a dry county, there was no shortage of alcohol. And maybe as a landman, that shouldn't be a priority, but it kind of was in those days. And you know, the first guy that I worked for, and this may not be a pleasant enough story, but it's a little instructive, particularly for younger landmen, because I've told it to a lot of young guys. First guy I worked for out of college, we had a brokerage, and this was in the late 70s. The oil boom was going on. He probably had 30 guys working for him. I thought the guy had bad hay fever because he had the sniffles every Monday. turned out he had the sniffles for a different reason. It's because he was doing a lot of coke. The first Christmas season, he said, go in John's office. He's got your Christmas bonus in it. So I walk into his partner's office and he's got a big, big wooden desk, office desk, and it's covered with lines of cocaine. There's your Christmas bonus. And I said, well, I appreciate it, but A, I don't do it. And B, you know, I kind of need the money instead. And one of the other guys on the crew said, well, I'll buy yours. So I said, okay, whatever. Give me something. He gave me some money so he could have my lines of cocaine. As I walked out, I'm thinking, I just did a drug deal. This is not what I wanted to be doing. Fast forward about 20 years. The guy we were working for is a guy named Chris. And a buddy of mine called me and said, hey, I heard Chris got murdered. Well, if you knew this guy, this is not a stretch. A few years before, he'd been shot by a pimp. This guy had a tough life. So the fact that he might have been murdered is not a stretch. So I said, okay, who can we call to confirm this? How about his partner, John? No, he's dead. What about his best friend, Greg? No, he's dead. We went down the list of the people that we worked with. Seven were dead. One was a heart attack because of the landman lifestyle of eating too much, drinking, living on the road. Chris got murdered. The rest of them were all car wrecks. So I used to tell young landmen, don't drive drunk and don't even drive tired. And if your boss tells you to go do something and you're too tired to drive, you need to have the guts to just tell him flat out, no, I'm not doing it. And if he fires you, fine, he doesn't care about you. But it's not a job that seems like it's inherently dangerous. But we were just shocked by the number of guys that we worked with who, you know, 15, 20 years later are dead. So yeah, working on rigs is dangerous, but there are aspects of being a field landman in those days that don't seem dangerous, but could be.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to this episode of the podcast. I hope you enjoyed. The Minerals and Royalties Authority is a specialist advisory firm focused exclusively on the minerals and royalty space for oil and gas and renewables. With our leading content platform and thought leadership, our team is continually looking to bring awareness to the mineral space in order to help investors and companies buy and sell deals and form new partnerships. If you're interested in scheduling a call to explore ways the Minerals and Royalties Authority can help your team through our offering of consulting services for business development, marketing, capital raising, and A&D, then please send me an email at tim@mineralsauthority.com. Also, please don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and be sure to share these episodes with anyone in your network that you think would enjoy. Thanks, and see you next time.